Get ready. It's time for News for the Soul. Life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. Join us as we celebrate 11 years of empowerment broadcasts, becoming the number one life-changing talk radio show in the world, according to Google, AOL, MSN, YouTube, and more, and home to the largest, totally free transformational audio library in the world, all found at newsforthesoul.com. And now, here's your host and the founder of News for the Soul, the one they're calling the Oprah of the Internet, Nicole Whitney.
Good morning, Monday morning. Well, it is here in Vancouver, BC, Canada, and we're live for a special show, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. My guest, a regular of many, many years on News for the Soul, yay, one of my favorite people and one of the most intriguing adventures on the air to date, David Icke, the quote-unquote most controversial speaker in the world. We're going to be talking about what's new, what's the latest. I'm sure swine flu and those kinds of latest current events are going to work their way into the conversation, which I'm sure, as always, will be intriguing and inspiring and perhaps even surprising. We're going to try to get him on the line here momentarily, and also I have put it out to field some questions. Never had a chance really to do that prior with David, so we'll see if we can work some of those questions you've sent in into the show. And here's what we'll do. We'll get the breaks out of the way. Not that they're in the way, but we'll get them done so we can go straight through, hopefully, live with David momentarily. DavidIcke.com is his website, and if you miss any of this show, our website, where you can hear it all free all the time forevermore, newsforthesoul.com. We will see you in a couple of minutes.
For years, News for the Soul listeners have had a direct experience with their power to create their reality through our exclusive Spoon Bending Kit, a mind over matter training that teaches you how to bend metal with your mind for real. Well, what if you can use that same technology on your finances? What if you can take your same intention power and use it on the so-called recession? Well, you can. News for the Soul has just announced the release of its newest life-changing kit, the Prosperity Kit. We have combined the intention technology of our spoon bending kits with a decade of research to create a program that has the power to change your financial life. Isn't it time to transcend fear and live the way we intended? For real? Go now to newsforthesoul.com and click on the Prosperity Kit banner. That's newsforthesoul.com.
In December 2005, News for the Soul host Nicole Whitney experienced the most dramatic, life-changing psychic reading of her life. In that brief 10-minute mini-session, she released years of emotional baggage when Carrie O'Connor connected with a recently deceased family member, bringing Nicole a life-changing message from beyond the grave. Since that fateful day, Nicole has invited Carrie O'Connor on as a regular News for the Soul guest to do readings on the air. But you do not have to wait. Carrie is available for private sessions right now. Nicole has laughingly suggested wearing goggles and a helmet for these sessions because of the powerful energy that seems to come through Carrie when she's doing a reading. But don't take our word for it. Experience it for yourself. So pack up your goggles and helmet and book your life-changing session with Carrie O'Connor today. Go to CarrieO'Connor.com. That's CarrieO'Connor.com.
How would you like to learn how to bend metal with your mind for real? Well, you can. News for the Soul is home to the one and only Spoon Bending Kit, an instantly downloadable digital gift that contains 2 hours of audio and visual instructions designed to get your mind out of the way and teach you how to truly affect solid matter just with your thoughts. Find out once and for all how you are affecting your reality with every thought you think. Don't let anything block you from creating the life that you want. Download the newsforthesoul.com spoon bending kit today. Just go to newsforthesoul.com right now and click on the bent spoon. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Who are you? Why are you here? What is the meaning of life? These burning questions have plagued mankind throughout our existence. How would you like to experience a process that would allow you to have some of the answers? Answers that would cause you to live with higher awareness and deeper authenticity from now on? Well, you can.
Warrior Sage is offering an experiential 5-day enlightenment workshop called Illumination Intensive. Regularly about $3,000 to attend, Satyan Raja of Warrior Sage is offering this life-changing 5-day course to News for the Soul listeners totally for free. That's right, the tuition has been completely waived for all News for the Soul listeners. Satyan says this experience is so profound, he wants to share it with the world. So don't miss out on this special opportunity. To have your own direct experience of awakening with Warrior Sage, go to illuminationintensive.com now and tell them News for the Soul sent you. That's illuminationintensive.com.
Are you in pain, overweight, unwell, stuck, or unhappy with any area of your life? Healing from the Body Level Up can help you. HBLU is a unique mind-body holistic psychotherapy for the 21st century. Created by Dr. Judith Swack, HBLU is an effective way to eliminate struggle by clearing mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual blocks to success, so you can rapidly achieve the results you want to live a full, happy, healthy, and satisfying life. Tune in to our next News for the Soul broadcast featuring Dr. Judith Swack, or visit hblu.org right now to find out more. That's hblu.org.
For years, News for the Soul listeners have had a direct experience with their power to create their reality through our exclusive Spoon Bending Kit, a mind over matter training that teaches you how to bend metal with your mind for real. Well, what if you can use that same technology on your finances? What if you can take your same intention power and use it on the so-called recession? Well, you can. News for the Soul has just announced the release of its newest life-changing kit, the Prosperity Kit. We have combined the intention technology of our spoon bending kits with a decade of research to create a program that has the power to change your financial life. Isn't it time to transcend fear and live the way we intended? For real? Go now to newsforthesoul.com and click on the Prosperity Kit banner. That's news.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.
We're back. I'm seeing this is News for the Soul. Oh, look, it's 11:11 Pacific time. And today on News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained, once again, all covered, of course, one of my favorite guests over the many years we've been talking to him as the human evolution journey continues and lots of adventures. Well, I'm sure today will be no exception to what we're going to be covering. David Icke, the quote-unquote most controversial speaker in the world, is here. DavidIcke.com, that's his website, and we're going to find out what the latest is right now. Welcome back, David, to News for the Soul.
Thanks, Nicole.
So, do you really feel like the most controversial speaker in the world, really?
I don't think about it, to be honest. I mean, you know, when you speak things that are different to the prevailing accepted reality, then you become, I guess, controversial to the accepted reality, and I'm saying things that are way outside of what people think is happening in the world and the nature of life itself. So I guess controversy follows me around. But what's happening is that people's minds are opening and letting consciousness in on a gathering scale. And when you do that, people like me become less controversial because people can encompass things that the closed mind rejects by reflex action. So I'm seeing a massive increase in acceptance of things that I say that would have been ridiculed and dismissed immediately not so long ago. Something's happening. A lot of things are happening that aren't good, but a lot of things are happening that are.
Yeah, so you're also, I mean, I've noticed that as well in recent, like the last year or two, huge drastic changes in openness in large amounts of people. So you're seeing that as well.
Oh, I've been seeing it for a long time, because when I started talking about this in its multi-facets, whether it's the day-to-day, names, dates, places, conspiracy, which has led us to where we are now, which is facing a global dictatorship in the face, or whether it's the nature of reality itself, which is fundamentally connected to what I've just said as well, I'm seeing people's minds open and them being able to encompass concepts and possibilities that they would never have done before. And it's been a exponential curve where it started slowly and then got quicker and then quicker and quicker. And it's incredible now, the number of people who are looking at life from a different angle, different point of observation, and therefore seeing the world and themselves in a completely different light. And we need to do that, and we need to do that fast, because we're heading into times now. This swine flu scam and the vaccination that has been created by those that created swine flu in the first place, and the economic situation that we face, and many other things that are planned, are going to be enormously challenging anyway. But if we come from the perspective that we are our bodies, that we are our names, that we are the reflection in the mirror and that's it, then it's going to be a heck of a lot more challenging for those people than those that realize that that's the vehicle that connects us into this virtual reality we call the universe. And what we actually are is consciousness having an experience. And it's going to be so, so important that people view their experience from that perspective, because A, it will give them perspective on what's going on. They'll be able to see the big picture rather than the myopic one. And it will also help them to realize that is just an experience that they're having. It's not something that's forever, and it's not something that is unchangeable. It's just the experience they're having at this time. And what they are is consciousness, and that's eternal. That's the nature of who they really are. And it's the body that's experiencing this reality, and that's the part of us that, quote, dies. Even that doesn't die, and it dies in the form of a body. It's just infinite energy itself. But if we come from that perspective and hold that we are consciousness having an experience, it's going to be much easier to meet the challenges that are coming, because they are many and they are close.
Mm. Okay, so I mean, you mentioned the swine flu and the swine flu scam, as you call it, and that it was created by someone. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, of course, I've been talking with you over the years many times about a simple technique I call problem reaction solution. You create the problem, you get the reaction, fear, outrage, do something, and then you offer the solution to the problem you've created. Now, if the problem is not out there, then you either, as with weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, you invent it as a thought form, a theory, a theoretical situation. You know there's no weapons of mass destruction there. You just persuade the people there are, and I call that technique no problem reaction solution. And that's very effective if people don't do any research. But there's another aspect of this, which is if you haven't got a problem, then create one. And the swine flu virus that is now supposed to terrify us, I'm shaking as I speak, was created in a laboratory. There's an Austrian journalist called Jane Burgermeister, who's actually filed charges with the FBI against Baxter International, Novartis, and other drug companies, and which all work as one unit if you go high enough. Against Obama and against a Rockefeller, a Rothschild, and George Soros, the billionaire financier, and a lot of other people and organizations, for actually creating the virus and then the vaccine, which is designed to cause enormous harm to people. There are people who are have researched this in great detail. People go to the headlines on my website, they'll see videos about this from these people talking at some length about their research. And the idea is to so create panic about this deadly swine flu virus that, so they tell us, that they will get mass immunization of the population around the world. See, Baxter International, based in Illinois, is one of the companies coming up with the vaccine for something that came to light in Mexico in April, I think it was. Baxter International applied for the patent for the vaccine for this strain of swine flu in August 2008. So clearly, to work for Baxter International, you have to be an extremely skilled psychic or corrupt, and I'm not sure about the psychic bit. So what we're looking at is the creation of a perceived problem, and because the symptoms of swine flu are so like what we call normal flu, and about 500,000 people die worldwide of normal flu every year. I mean, in Britain today, they've just introduced a system whereby if you've got symptoms of swine flu, then you don't go to the doctor anymore. You talk to someone on the phone in a call center situation that's been set up. You tell them your symptoms, and they tell you what they think you've got. Now, you've got ordinary flu, or you've got a bad cold. You ring up and you say, I've got these symptoms because the media's told you, be frightened of bird flu. And the guy on the other end or the lady on the other end says, oh, yes, you've got swine flu. I mean, swine flu, bird flu is the same. That was another manufactured virus. The two go together. And so what happens is you get ticked off as someone who's got swine flu when you're not necessarily have it at all. And the figures get higher and higher. And the ratchet up of the fear factor. I mean, the government here have said, oh, 65,000 people could get it and all the rest of it. And in doing so, you get people lining up to get the vaccine. And in that vaccine is going to be some really horrible stuff in terms of physical, mental, and emotional damage that's going to come from it. So when you've got companies creating the virus in the first place, the symptoms are being overwhelmingly, in the vast overwhelming number of people, mild. And yet you then have this announcement of a pandemic and this panic to create a vaccine and have massive, vaccination programs around the world where they want everyone vaccinated, then it's clear that the reaction is not in proportion to the problem as it stands, and therefore there's a reason they want that vaccine inside the global population. And it's because of a long-term plan to cull the population. They want to reduce the world population by a very large number of people, and to create other problems. And if people do only one thing to protect themselves and their family in the next few months, don't have the vaccine.
Now, we've talked about this again over the years as well, but for those that might be new to this conversation, who are the they that are planning these things?
Well, it's a very simple structure, and it has to be to work. If it was too complex, it would just fall apart. The background is that a network of bloodlines came out of the ancient world, particularly ancient Sumer and Babylon, which is now, of course, Iraq. They're not in Iraq just for oil or just for control. There's many reasons they're in there. And one of them is that area of land, Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers, is very, very important to them energetically and also in terms of historical reasons. And these bloodlines came in out of other parts of the world too, China and other areas of the world. But that area of Mesopotamia is very, very important for the people in control of the system, the global system today. They moved up into Europe. They became the European royal families and aristocracy. And then when the people began to reject overt control by dictatorship, royal dictatorship, they moved, although they still stayed there with the British royal family, the Spanish royal family, etc., and the aristocracy of Europe and Britain. But they overwhelmingly moved into what I call the dark superfessions, and they created, established, and took over business, banking, media ownership eventually when the media came along, control of governments, etc. And what they've created now, and this is how the spider's web works, if you think of the structure of a transnational corporation, you have the headquarters, and in this case it's in Europe, not the European governments, the center of the secret society web, but operational level is in Europe. It's in places like London, Paris, Rome, Berlin, particularly London and Rome, it seems. And this web of secret societies, which is what this web is, but it's structured exactly as a transnational corporation. You've got the headquarters in Europe, the center of the web, what I call the spider. And in every country, including Canada, every country, there is a network of these families which oversee a secret society network of exclusive, very secret, and semi-secret organizations. And their job is to control, in their sphere of influence, their country, that country's politics, business, banking, media ownership, military, pharmaceutical companies, etc. And so when the spider at the center of the web dictates the global policy, these subsidiary networks in each country then go to work to introduce that policy in their sphere of influence. And this is how the same changes take place in societies that are apparently unconnected all over the world about the same time, justified by the same excuses, and often even the legislation's worded the same. So that's how they control from a central point different countries. Now, this web, in terms of swine flu and the pharmaceuticals, this web will go into the pharmaceutical companies, what we call Big Pharma, will go into Baxter International. It will go into Novartis and all the rest of it. It will also, however, go into the public protection agencies of government, like the Centers for Disease Control in America, and it will go into the doctors' professional organizations, like the American Medical Association, the British Medical Association, and its Canadian equivalent. And it will go into the World Health Organization. You see, the idea is for a centralized global dictatorship. So anytime you see the word world in an organization, it's part of this operation, because they've created a series of world organizations to centralize power so they can dictate from a central point. So you have the World Bank, you have the World Trade Organization, and in relation to this swine flu conspiracy, you have the World Health Organization. And so the same force controls the World Health Organization, the Centers for Disease Control and their equivalent in different countries, and the pharmaceutical companies that are both creating the virus and the vaccine to meet the problem of the virus. So once you've stitched up the whole of this network, you've controlled the companies doing it, and you've controlled the regulators that should be stopping the companies doing it. You control the world body, the World Health Organization, which is the vehicle through which you bring this to a global pandemic and also to global vaccination campaigns. And this is what's happened. And they want access to the human body on a vast scale, because they have something that they want to use to cause immense harm to humanity on a very large scale. And we must not allow that to happen by accepting these vaccinations, because there's going to be tremendous pressure on them. What you're going to see, because it's a mind game in the end, you're going to have those that blindly, sheep-like, unquestioningly accept the vaccination for themselves and their children, putting pressure on those who resist, because the authorities are going to be saying, well, yes, we've had large numbers of people vaccinated, but we still haven't got the herd protection that we need. We need a certain percentage of the population to have this herd protection. And so they're going to put pressure on people to accept the vaccine on that basis. We must not allow that to intimidate us into it. And we need to get together, those who are awake to this, people need to get together and start organizing themselves to resist compulsory vaccination, because that's what they want. They want compulsory vaccination. And if you have not got control, Nicole, of what actually goes into your body, the state is dictating that. Well, if you want to give me a better definition of a fascist state, then I would love to hear it.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, coming from the conscious perspective that we've put everything in over the years, how do we resist without creating something and making it persist? How do we do this?
Well, you know, the number of people who are actually doing this is a fraction of the population that's having it done to them. The way that we are controlled is by divide and rule. I've just given a wonderful example of divide and rule. Mm-hmm. Get those that unquestionably accept the vaccine and the danger of the swine flu to put pressure on other people who are saying no. This is how it works. And when you become conscious, as opposed to being stuck in what I call mind, which is the interface between consciousness and this virtual reality, and the vast majority of human beings that have gone through the programming from cradle to grave that we're put through from the time we enter this world, have had their point of observation of self and the world located in mind. It's like me sitting in front of this computer and going on the internet, and then the computer deciding where I should go and what I should think of it. That's what happens when you get stuck in mind. Mind is there as a access point, as an interface between consciousness, infinite consciousness, and this cosmic internet, as I call it, this virtual reality universe we've talked about many times. Now, if my consciousness works in concert, in unity with mind, then that's fine. It's like me sitting at this computer, and I'm deciding where I go on the internet, and I'm deciding what I think of it. The computer's just getting me there. Then both are giving a positive contribution to experience of what we're doing. But most people are manipulated, as I say, to see everything from the perspective of mind and filter everything through the five senses. And the world of the five senses and the left brain is about seeing everything in terms of division, apartness, structure, hierarchy, and all the rest of it. It's the world that we live in. We live in a left brain, mind-made world because of the situation that I'm describing. If we are going to move from that and become conscious, then everything starts to change. First of all, consciousness doesn't do intimidation by the neighbor saying, you're putting my children at risk, you should have the vaccination. And nor does it just submit and line up and, you know, put its arm out because the government says it's compulsory. It will not do what it knows not to be right. And the more people that come from that perspective of consciousness and also realize that this is just an experience, so therefore whatever consequences there are for doing what you know to be right, well, that's fair enough. Because the consequences of not doing what you know to be right are far worse. What's the worst that can happen? You know, you die. Well, you know, I'm terrified. I don't know, I'm going to cope, you know, Nicole. I'm shaking because I might die, and I'm shaking because of swine flu. I mean, what else am I going to be shaking at? You know, when you come from a point of view of consciousness, things like consequences for doing what is right do not enter the equation. You just do it. And if enough people do that, then this system will not be able to cope, because there's not enough of those who are doing it knowingly to impose it on the population. And also drop the whole idea that I am black and you are white, I'm Jewish and you're Islamic, or I earn a good salary, or you live in the street, you know, or I'm a Christian, you're a Muslim. I mean, these ludicrous, childish, mind-made fault lines of divide and rule, they've got to go. Because if they don't, then we are going to be divided and ruled into this global fascist dictatorship within a few years from now. That's how close it is. And in fact, we're in it. It's just, like I said earlier, a case of degree. And if we become conscious and we start to do what we know to be right, and we ditch this fear of consequences for doing what we know to be right, then the system starts to fall. And if we don't do this, then it means we're in mind. And if we're in mind, well, we're a manipulator's party trick, and this whole thing is going to happen. But it doesn't have to happen if we don't concede ourselves to mind, to the computer, and we become conscious. Because being conscious is not a state of theoretical being. Being conscious is not sitting there cross-legged saying, I'm conscious. Consciousness expresses itself within the world of form, within the virtual reality, as action, as your physical, what you physically do. And it doesn't just sit there on the sidelines and observe and say, oh yes, that's interesting. Oh look, they're microchipping people there. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, well, I said that would happen, didn't I? Didn't I tell you that would happen? Yeah. That, look, well, they're doing it over there. Consciousness doesn't do that. Consciousness expresses itself, does what it knows to be right, and expresses itself within this reality that way. And I see a lot of people, Nicole, who consider themselves spiritual and conscious and all the rest of it, and yet they just sit on the sidelines and ignore this stuff, you know. And they say, well, you know, we just got to be spiritual. Well, if this whole thing comes down, then you can forget alternative healing. You can forget openly expressing your spirituality and your views on reality if it's at odds with what the state wants the people to believe is reality. Forget all that. That goes down as well. You know, this is what we're facing. So it's not, okay, well, it's not my problem. That is the problem. That people constantly say, when they see a situation, how does this affect me? I was listening. I went to my son's engagement party yesterday. It was lovely. And they played a Michael Jackson song where there's a repeating line in it. What about me? What about me? What about me? And it's the mantra that people constantly ask. You know, all right, this situation, but does it affect me? What about me? And if we constantly do that, then eventually it is about me as the time moves on, but there's no one else around to help me out of the situation I'm now in, because while I looked on, all these other people in society were being picked off. Well, someone was sitting here, someone doesn't affect me, it's not my problem. Yes, it is. If there's one person in Canada, North America, anywhere, that does not have the right, the free right, to express their opinion, whatever it may be, then no one is free to express an opinion. Because what we perceive to be freedom is not freedom of speech at all. It's the illusion of freedom to have views within certain parameters. And so someone else's freedom of speech being taken away is our freedom of speech being taken away. Someone's children being taken away from their parents, which is what's happening in this country in extraordinary numbers now, because the whole idea, one area of this global conspiracy, is that state takes complete control of the children from parents, and it's happening. In this country now, the power that schools and teachers and head teachers have over parents in terms of their children is tremendous compared with what it used to be. We're having now family courts in this country that are secret and the media can't attend them, that are taking children away from their families and giving them to foster parents of the state's choice for the most ludicrous reasons. We've had so many examples of this. It's incredible. We had an example recently, Nicole, where social workers were with a parent who just had a child after spending £38,000 on fertility treatment because she so desperately wanted a child. And she joked with the social worker that the birth had ruined her figure. And on the basis of that, eventually her children were taken away and given to foster parents. And what they say is, if you do not accept this, then you will never see your child again. If you accept it, you can go and see your child once a month, once whenever, for an hour. But if you fight this, taking your children away, then you are never going to see them again. Now, this is happening not every now and again. This is happening increasingly regularly. And if we look at that and we say, well, they're not my kids, not my problem, well, eventually it will be. And that's just one example across the great swathe of life and the tapestry of life, where if we don't get involved and see other people's injustice as our injustice, then eventually it's our injustice and there's no one around. It's like that saying of that guy, Pastor Neumüller in Germany, after the Second World War. First they came for the Jews and I was not a Jew, so I did nothing. Then they came for the communists and I was not a communist, so I did nothing. Then they came for the trade unionists and I was not a trade unionist, so I did nothing. Then they came for me and there was no one left to speak out for me. You know, we are in a point now where it is so blatant to anyone with a mind on active duty what is going on, that there are no excuses left except fear and can't be bothered. Well, tell your children and your grandchildren now, when you think the world we're moving into so fast, think of the world they're going to live in. You tell them now, you look in their eyes and you tell them how you can justify ignoring this and doing nothing about it. Try that. I couldn't do it.
So here's the thing.
Won't do it because we have to get involved. And anyone that doesn't want to get involved is not conscious, because consciousness doesn't stand by and allow this to happen while being a spectator. It doesn't do it.
Well, here's what I think would be helpful from, you know, speaking to the conscious audience, right? And so many of us, I mean, the very slogan of, excuse me, hang on a second here. Got something in my throat. I'm sure it's...
You got swine flu.
I got swine flu. Call the authorities.
Give someone a call. They'll tell you. They'll confirm it.
Oh, look, I'm cured. Amazing. So now, I mean, from a conscious perspective, we know that what we focus on expands. We don't want to expand the negative side of this. What can we focus on as far as, you know, in a positive action from the conscious perspective? How can we reframe this so that it feels empowering as opposed to conflicting?
Well, what's more empowering than being empowered? You know, we had a situation here a few years ago during the time of Margaret Thatcher, when there was the introduction of a fundamentally unfair tax called the poll tax to fund local government. What it meant was that people on small incomes and people with very large incomes paid the same. I mean, it was just, you couldn't make it up. It was so unfair and unjust. Now, what happened was that this affected people who considered themselves to be middle class in this class-ridden society, in bigger houses, just as it affected poorer people, often very poorer people, in smaller houses and council houses, right? As a result, the fault line between the middle class and the working class, as they call it in Britain, disappeared because both were equally affected. What did they do in very large numbers? They refused to pay it. They refused to pay it, and they were, and I did as well. I went to court on it, and there was an amazing story that happened that day, which meant that every case in that court that day had to be dropped, and every conviction had to be overturned because they made a massive mistake in terms of the procedure. But that's another story. The point is that because people in large numbers refused to pay it and were willing to go to court over it, the system couldn't cope. More than that, was the poll tax debacle, as it turned out, because so many people refused to pay it, not only made sure that the poll tax had to be dropped and a fairer tax brought in, it actually was the engine room, if you like, behind the removal of Margaret Thatcher, the so-called Iron Lady, while she was still in office. She was removed by her own party, not by an election. And what greater empowerment can people feel than to empower themselves by refusing to cooperate with their own enslavement, by refusing to cooperate with injustice? I mean, what greater way for consciousness to express itself in an empowered way? You know, I mean, what's the alternative? Doing nothing because it's negative? You know, I'm not advocating, absolutely not, not one iota, one ounce, one inch, am I advocating any kind of violent resistance, because all you're doing is creating a polarity to greater violence on the other polarity at the other end called the state. And what you're doing is creating a mirror of what you're challenging. This is why I have this saying in my books, what you fight, you become. This is not about fighting. The last thing we need to do is fight, because when you fight, you have a war. You have a fight. Where's that going to take us? What I'm talking about is nonviolent, non-cooperation. The system depends upon the mass of the people cooperating with it. If people, for instance, refused en masse to have the swine flu vaccine, then the state would have no way of imposing itself on that volume of people. But because people line up and acquiesce, it's a, you know, not only does the state not you know, have no problem, you go to the state and put your arm out. You go to it. And if people are going to claim to be conscious and they want to be empowered, okay, express your empowerment in refusing to cooperate with injustice and refusing to cooperate with your own enslavement.
Okay, well, and that's a critical distinguishment between, you know, I mean, that's the most important point of all, I think, in what you've said today. So knowing, you know, the difference between those two things is the critical point. You know, I've never actually had a chance to do this before, but we put out the call to the, you know, opportunity to the audience to send in some questions.
Okay.
And we're just coming to the last 14 minutes of the show already, so I'd like to throw some of those
in. The time flies.
I know. It's crazy, huh?
It's funny, because there is no time, so how can it fly? But you
know. What's why? You know, and we had a question just in this moment about what you're talking about, so let me just read this out. This is from John. While I tend to support the thought that we should not take the vaccine, I had a scary thought that these groups are not stupid and may have thought out that the sensitive, aware folks would refuse to take the vaccine, so they've made it up that the ones who refuse are the ones who won't make it through. How do we discern which is the best approach?
Well, I think if you look at the evidence, and like I say, I'm putting a major article, background article, onto my website tomorrow, which I hope will go all over the web so that people can have access to this information, although there are many sources for this now. And I think when you look at the information and you look at the connections between all these different agencies involved in, first of all, the creation of swine flu and then the vaccination, the situation is very simple. Don't have the vaccine. It's just that simple. Don't have the vaccine. Don't let your kids have the vaccine, because you'll regret it forever if you do. and the evidence is there that has been documented in great detail about how these viruses are manufactured, and they have a program now, or a technology to, potential and understanding, which indeed goes back to Nazi Germany, never mind now, whereby they have an ability to inject you with a vaccine that switches your immune system off. And they do them in sets of three. Or you need a series of three vaccines to meet. Okay, yeah. And the first vaccine switches off the immune system, the white blood cells. The second one injects you with virus, and the third one switches the immune system back on.
Yeah.
And what this does is, when the reason you feel sick is it's the immune system fighting the virus. And you can, and they've shown this with the animal tests. I mean, I don't agree with animal tests, but they've done it with animal tests, where they've injected viruses into animals, rats, whatever, and they've switched their immune system off in the way that I'm talking about, and the rats have run around feeling fine, not showing any signs of being sick, and then they've switched the immune system back on again. And immediately, or very quickly, often immediately, the rat is dead. Why? Because when the immune system is switched back on, it is faced with a bombardment of challenges with these viruses, and it reacts by sending antibodies out in such numbers that it kills the body. It gets the body to kill itself. There's a name for it. It's the immune system reacting so powerfully, so quickly, that the body can't cope, and it kills the body. And they've done this in animal tests, and they've had this potential now for decades. And the people that have researched this in detail are suggesting that this could well be what's going on in terms of the swine flu vaccine, because this has been played out for so long. Like the 1976 swine flu, quote, scare in America, where a number of people died and about 500 were seriously maimed by the vaccine, and only one person died of swine flu, and that was we got to trust the government's kind of information that the diagnosis of that was correct, because it was a soldier, and how can we tell? And these things like this, Nicole, are trials. They're run-throughs. Because it's a mind game, they're constantly putting these little trials on to see how people react to these different situations and gleaning more information and more knowledge. And so when they play the big one, and this swine flu situation we're facing now has all the signs of being a big one, they are prepared, and they are well-versed in the likely reactions of people to the input of fear and propaganda that there's a pandemic and your children are in danger and you're in danger, you know, line up and get the vaccine. So it's a real simple thing. It's not, well, should I have the vaccine or should not? Don't have the vaccine. People must do what they like. It's free choice, of course. It's not for me to tell them what to do. But I strongly, strongly suggest that people get informed on the background to this and don't have themselves or their children have the vaccine, because this is seriously, seriously not good, what they're planning to do.
Diane in Georgia, let's try to squeak in one more and then mention the dates that you're going to be speaking in the States. She's asking, what is the most effective way, on that note, I mean, just the ooginess on that message, you know, bleh. What is the most effective way to support ourselves and our families continue with spiritual development in a time when such heavy frequencies are bombarding us?
Well, that's... That's a good question, but,
yeah.
You know, it's point of observation. You know, if you observe the world from the perspective of body-mind, then you are going to experience the world in a certain way. The more that your point of observation moves symbolically back to consciousness, and you observe from consciousness through the body into this reality, the more your perspective will be one in which you do not panic, you do not bow to fear, and you do not succumb to these lower vibrational levels that we are being bombarded with. Because the whole foundation of this conspiracy, and it goes back a long time in our perception of linear time, the whole foundation of it, as I've said many times on this program, is to keep people out of consciousness and in mind. And so to do that, they destabilize us chemically and electromagnetically and electrically, because the body's an electrochemical organism. And if it is imbalanced in that way, because it's a receiver-transmitter, that's how it connects to consciousness, then it will not connect to consciousness in the way that it optimally could do. The more you bring the vibrational state of the body down, the more difficult it is to connect with the much higher vibrations of what we call consciousness. And the more you get people in fear, the more the energy at the body-mind level starts to vibrate with more density. That's what fear does. And so that's why I say, if we allow our point of observation to be body-mind, we are observing the world through all that stuff, through that low vibrational density of fear, through that chemical and electromagnetic imbalance. Whereas if we become conscious or observe from a point of consciousness, then we start to connect into the body from that point with much higher vibrational frequencies. And that does the opposite. It starts to lift and increase the resonant frequency of body-mind. Because, you know, you look at it kind of symbolically, if you look forward into the world, you're looking forward into the density that, and all the things that I've just talked about. But if you look back symbolically to consciousness, then that also can connect with the body. And instead of bringing it down into density, that brings it up into higher levels of frequency, which increases the ability of consciousness to influence the body-mind level of reality and experience. And suddenly we're looking at the world from a very different perspective. We're understanding things we didn't understand before. We're seeing connections we couldn't see before because our point of observation has moved. So holding this consciousness, holding the fact, very simply, when you look in the mirror, that's not David Icke. I'm not David Icke. David Icke is an experience I am having. It is a name for my experience and the vehicle that through which I'm having the experience. I am consciousness. It's infinite consciousness, just like you are, and everyone listening to the show is, and everyone in all existences. And if you can hold that, whatever the experience is, I am consciousness having this experience. I'm not the experience. I'm having the experience. I'm not the experience. David Icke is an experience. He's not me. I am consciousness. Then this process I'm talking about starts to move. There's an energy shift out of density, out of purely five-sense filtering of reality. And what frightens mind-body does not frighten consciousness. What intimidates mind-body does not intimidate consciousness, and you start to interact with the world in a completely different way, and you don't react in the way that this whole conspiracy is designed to make us react through fear and through all the other emotional triggers that we're constantly are constantly applied to us. So holding that point of observation, I am eternal consciousness of an experience, and not letting that move into, I'm David Icke, I'm Nicole, is very, very important. Because those people who live through this, it's very challenging, a very, very challenging time, but it's an experience. We've come here, we're having an experience, let's get on with it. We're eternal consciousness, we'll be out of here eventually, and the experience will be over. But those that go through this period we're heading into fast now, in mind-body reality, they're going to have an incredibly, incredibly challenging time, far more than those that hold this point of observation I'm talking about of consciousness.
And boy, we've barely scratched the surface here. We're less than a minute to getting cut off from the system. We're out of time. Can we do this again and maybe go right through their questions in the second hour? Can I get you back on soon?
Yeah, we'll work something out. I mean,
okay.
I'm doing 12-hour days at the moment because the interest in this is such a fantastic. I'm writing a new book which is going to move this whole thing forward.
Wow. And you're
in terms of the
US
how deep the rabbit hole
well.
Goes.
You've got some
yeah, and second half of the year, I'm kind of talking everywhere. I'm in America for 2-3 weeks in October. I'm talking in Bellingham, which is just, of course,
ooh,
south of Vancouver and north of Seattle. So it's in that position that both people can get to. That's on October the 4th. Details on my website. I'm in Santa Fe on October the 11th, and I'm in Phoenix on October the 17th. And these are all-day talks, like 7-8 hours, where I'm connecting the dots with about 1,000 illustrations.